Look, up in the sky.
Is that a bird?
Is it a plane?
No, it's the latest Superman film, taking a nosedive.
Really?
Actually, I quite enjoyed it.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in our long line of staggering stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Adam.
I'm Master Man.
And I, yes, I am Merely Keith.
Lonely Keith.
No.
Yes.
Lonely. On my own.
At least we remembered to say our names this week. last podcast we actually forgot.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Didn't get the wrong names.
Well, there was a few problems last podcast. Adam, are we recording?
We're definitely recording right from the very beginning. We don't have to redo the news at all.
Not that we forgot that we'd turn on the recording last time, but,
it was very hot, though.
It was.
We were melting. Was.
Crazy from the heat.
Crazy from the heat.
Yes. Tonight is a sausage fest.
Yes.
No ladies, unfortunately, tonight.
No. Oh, well.
You're in for it when Karen hears.
I know. I usually am. Even when Karen hears this, I'm usually in for it.
Yeah. Anyway, without further ado, wearing its underpants on the outside, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo!
Doctor Who news!
Oh, yeah. Lay it on us.
Doctor Who, Tom's Lucky 13.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time again for the first face-ish release of Doctor Who Blu-ray box set goodness. This time, Doctor Who, The Collection,
ooh,
is bringing us Classic Who Season 13.
Yes.
Tom Baker's second in the role.
Mm.
Voted as Doctor Who's magazine's favourite season back in 2009, before Series 5 of New Who.
It was.
This sees the fourth Doctor with Elizabeth Sladen's Sarah Jane Smith and a bit of Ian Martin's Harry Sullivan.
And Anorak.
Yeah, not sure which bit of Ian Martin, but...
Mm.
Moving rapidly on. It features stories of Terror of the Zygons, ooh, Planet of Evil, Pyramids of Mars, the Android Invasion, Brain of Morbius, and the Seeds of Doom. Special features include a profile on Ian Marta, producer Philip Comeover Hitchcliffe's return to some fabulous and famous locations, Matthew Sweet talks to director Graham Harper.
Not sure why.
Tom Baker himself discusses the season. More behind the sofa. New commentaries featuring Baker. Omnibus editions of Pyramids, Morbius, and Seeds of Doom. Etc. Etc. Etc.
Yes, good one. Presumably Graham Harper worked on the series, but not as director.
I believe
he was assisting.
During that time on the BBC,
Douglas Canfield.
Yeah, during that time on the BBC, they had prospective directors work in every department before they went on the directorial course.
Yes, I know he worked Doctor before he became the director of Cave Zanzani. Was his first, was it?
Yeah, I think Cave was his first. Yeah. This 8-disc set can be pre-ordered now for roughly 55 squid.
Well, it's definitely the evil Harry Sullivan. Ooh, that's the part we've got this time.
Terror of the Zygons, yes.
And that's, evil Anorak.
Yes.
Terry Nation, isn't it? Not doing Daleks.
Ooh,
yes.
I believe
I believe it is, yes.
Mm. Murderbot.
Oh, yes. Ooh.
Back for more.
Yeah.
Apple TV's Murderbot, based on the All Systems Red Book by Martha Wells, has been quite a hit for the streamer. So much that, as the final episode of the first season went out, we got news it's been renewed for a second.
Ooh.
The premise has been described as a media-obsessed private security construct manufactured from cloned human tissue and mechanical parts, calling itself Murderbot.
must hide its newly acquired autonomy while completing dangerous assignments and being simultaneously drawn to humans and appalled at their weakness.
The series stars Alexander Skarsgård, perhaps known for True Blood and Succession, and Norma Dumez...
We just had that conversation. Yeah. How do we pronounce that one?
No idea.
Dumezweni, that's it, who played UNIT's Captain Erisa Magambo in Turn Left and Planet of the Dead.
Don't recognise the name, but I will recognise the face.
Yes, I'm sure you can see her in your mind's eye, yes.
Yeah.
She threatens to shoot Malcolm.
Yes. I have never watched Murderdebot.
Well, you have to have Apple
TV. Yeah, it's on Apple TV. One, we only have a select set of streaming things. And two, I have problems at Apple to begin with. So.
Well, yes, that's true. Me too. But their TV's pretty good.
Yeah.
They do a lot
of sci-fi. That's the trouble. How dare they be good? How dare they force me to enjoy this?
No.
We have more Doctor Who news.
Oh, yes.
Oh, this is exciting. Anselin returns for a bit of Bambera.
Who misses?
Those audio mongers at Big Finish are, as ever, keeping very busy. Now they are adding a new box set to their UNIT Brave New World series, featuring Brigadier Winifred Bambera.
Shame.
This one features the return of Jean's fan favourite character, of Anselin.
I wonder if she knows. We'll have to mention it next time we see her.
Yes. Yeah.
Big Finish say of this set...
Worlds are about to collide as Winifred Bambera faces the greatest dilemma of her life. Her lost beloved husband, Anselin, is back, and all hell is about to break loose. Facing armies of darkness and the wrath of the mighty Queen Guinevere, can the course of true love...
Get the poem. Someone get the poem.
Ah, flagellation. Just this once?
The three-story set of UNIT : Brave New World : Nightfall is available for pre-order now. Download for only £20 and will be available for download sometime next March.
Mm.
But not on CD as usual.
Not on CD anymore, no.
They're going to run out of colons.
Mm. They are.
You ain't got a finite amount.
Big Finish are very good at finding the colons.
They are. They are indeed. They search the depths of the colons.
They do. Trying to extract all that money from you. Mark Snow.
Dead.
Yeah, Mark Snow, a.k.a. Martin Fulterman, is his real name, apparently. Film and TV composer has been probed to death by aliens, aged 78.
78?
Yeah. I had no idea it's quite so old.
No, I never thought of it.
Probably best known for composing the iconic theme to The X-Files, but his extensive CV went well beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on such series as Starsky and Hutch, Flatbush, Brothers and Sisters, The Love Boat, Heart to Heart, Cagney and Lacey, T.J. Hooker, Pee-wee's Playhouse, The Lone Gunman, of course, Smallville, The Twilight Zone, 2002, and 287 episodes of Blue Bloods.
What is that?
That's a cop.
Tom Selleck. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Better. Police family. Film scores include The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, Something About Amelia, I Married a Centrefold, Ernest Saves Christmas, and his final film, The New Mutants.
Well, I'm very surprised about that because, myself and Fake Crumbly, we just started rewatching The X-Files.
Yeah.
That is an excellent theme tune, isn't it?
It is.
One of the best.
Came out on a single, didn't it?
Looking at the list, there is some iconic shows in there.
That's only a very small part of his. Yeah. There's a lot more stuff he did, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realise he was 78, but looking at how far back the list goes.
Yeah, it makes sense. Starsky and Hutch and things like that.
Yeah.
The Jolly Old Love Boat.
Mid-1970s,
wasn't it? Yeah. Bearing in mind the first season of The X-Files was 1993?
Over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's more than 30 years ago now. That's crazy, isn't it? So, any addendums?
I have two.
All right.
Two addendums, mostly concerning Mr. Gatwa.
Right.
One's on the BBC due to the radiotimes.com. It was asked where he was, why he left the show.
Right.
And does admit that it's an amazing job, but because I'm getting old and my body was tired. I've now just started doing some ballet, so I'm making some good decisions here. It's the most amazing job in the world. It's a job that any actor would dream of. And because it's so good, it's strenuous and takes a lot out of you physically, emotionally and mentally.
Mm. Now, that's interesting, because Christopher Eccleston was really annoyed that one of the reasons the BBC gave for him leaving was because he was tired.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as I was reading.
Yeah.
you got to admit, it is not just the 6 months that you get filming the show, or mm-hmm. the how many months. It's also the promotion. I mean, yes. Capaldi did the world tour. I'm quite sure for the reboot, him and Ruby Sunday, the actress's name.
Millie.
Thank you. Millie yes. Gibson. That's it. Millie Gibson. Did one also. It wasn't as much promoted, but it was still a world tour because they turned up outside Disney with the police box.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of what we don't understand is goes on behind the scenes when they're not actually...
And it's older than we think to it, despite having played a teenager only in recent
years. Yeah. And actually doing the show, there's now... constant running.
Yeah. Yes.
They are constantly...
And reshooting.
And reshooting. And my second one, again, with Mr. Gatwa, the pulling out of the Eurovision.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes. Reason, really?
Well, sort of. Apparently, he did pull out of Eurovision quite early, but it wasn't released, or the notification wasn't released about until the day beforehand.
Oh, okay.
But he'd pulled out of it quite early. Hang on, my tablet's just...
Nice to pull out early, does it?
So we've heard.
Mr. Gatwa claimed that he decided not to be a part of this year's Eurovision long before it was announced.
Doctor Who wore him out, basically.
Yeah. It was... The information broke just one day before Eurovision. Yeah, but exactly. Actually, it made the decision and told the powers that be about a month or so in advance.
That must have been before we were even told he was going to be in it. It was only a couple of weeks before.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But
he's unforeseen circumstances, he says. It was just that he was very busy. There was a lot going on, and he just didn't have a window in his schedule.
Oh, well. Who knows? Let's take him at his word.
Yeah.
But he's yesterday's man now.
Yeah.
Well, Billy Piper is today's man.
He did say that he would be open to doing a reunion show or popping up as 13 did.
Okay. Oh, good.
He's open to that.
Yeah. It's tricky now.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to get the multi-doctor story in again.
Yeah.
Proper one, not just a 30-second cameo with
Jodie.
Yeah. 13. Yeah. I don't know how that would fit in with how things are going with the series at the moment, or not going. I don't know.
I mean, well, the whole thing is on hold, certainly until after Land and the Sea airs, I would imagine.
Maybe.
I can't see we getting any announcements before then.
No, probably not. No, I think it's pretty clear that Disney have decided not to go ahead.
Yeah. They probably would have announced it by now, wouldn't they? Because they'd have to have plans in place, writers.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Ooh, back to basics. Back to good writing.
Back to webisodes.
Yep.
Bit of Schalke.
Back to spaceships on string.
Yep. Not quite.
Rubber monsters.
Anyway, thus endeth the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and little interesting creatures from Alpha Centauri.
Small blue furry creatures.
Yeah. We have been watching things.
Oh, yes.
What things have we been watching?
We've been watching on Netflix.
On Netflix.
Mm.
Love, Death and Robots.
Dun, dun, dun! Well... This is an interesting little kettle of fish.
Quirky.
Nature series. It's an anthology.
Oh. Yep.
Love anthologies.
Yep. Science fiction, horror, fantasy.
Yep.
All the genres.
Comedy thrown in for good measure. Yep. Yeah.
Generally animated shorts.
Yeah.
None longer than about 17 minutes.
Yeah, so the longest is about 17 to 20 minutes. Mm, yeah. The shortest is about 5 minutes.
Yes.
Certainly the first season was to showcase CGI work, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, but very much so.
It has expanded since then because you've got some straight out cartoon.
Mm. Yeah. I think out of all the episodes, there was only two real characters in the Icebox episode.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Ice Age.
It was a lost civilization, which was pretty good. It was like Lisa Simpson and a Petri dish.
Yes.
Yeah. I did enjoy that one. Yeah.
Mary Elizabeth.
Mind you, I'm sure we have all watched When the Yogurt Took Over.
Oh, that is up there with my top favourites, yeah, definitely.
So I'm not sure, because I've watched them all. I watched them when they first dropped, which I think was back in...
2019, was it?
2019, the first lot. Yeah. And the way it's set up, you can quite comfortably watch an entire season in an evening, which I've done on each...
Yeah.
Just drop.
Had quite a long evening, but
we tried this, but it was very sunny. There were lots of things going on, but yeah.
No, I think my favourite one so far have been, I think it's third, maybe fourth season.
Oh, right.
Is the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I did see that you showed me that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
must be season three.
Yeah, it's basically, the best way I can sum it up is Michael Bentine's Potty Time. You know, the long shot with the footprints?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, it's sort of like that, but you've got actual figures and they're all, it's speeded up to two times speed. So they're running along and you can hear.
It's like The Sims.
Yeah. Like Sims, but it is hilarious and ends with global apocalypse.
Oh, yes, yes. It's like the other one they did, First Contact, and the ensuing war that follows.
Yeah.
Earth and the surrounding area just goes up, and if you can see it from outside of the galaxy. You just see a small explosion and this...
Spark noise.
They definitely do well to choose appropriate types of CGI and design for each episode. Yes. So the comedy, like the yogurt episode, that was very sort of Despicable Me Minions style comedy. Yeah. I remember the first episode I watched being three robots where they go to apocalyptic. Literally within about a minute, I think I fell in love with the series because they're swearing.
Yes. Literally called three robots.
That's it. And the small ones convince the others that if you stop petting the cats, the only life form to survive, they explode and self-destruct. That goes on for quite a while. And the design work of each of the three robots is very different, isn't it? So you've got like an iRobot robot.
Yes.
You've got, so it looks like a metronome. Yes. And then the little one is like, it might be an obscure reference, but there was a show called Telebugs in the 80s, like a kid show. It was way ahead of its time because it was all about computer games and technology. And it reminded me of that. But some of the comedy ones, I liked Suits in Series 1, which is one of those way out west ranches with like cow rustlers.
Mm. Yes. Big mechs.
Yeah. And you sort of think, oh, are they going to put some suits on? And they are. They're like armoured Sigourney Weaver suits, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're battling demons. In fact, there's a couple of episodes where they're battling demons from a hellmouth, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
There's
quite
a few.
Yeah.
I'd say the ones that stick out in my mind, one of the first ones I watched was Beyond the Aquila Rift.
Oh, yes. God, yes. That one was quite macabre,
that was.
Yeah. Well, it ends up when he's actually seeing reality where he really is.
Oh, good grief, yes.
That is pretty dark. Yeah, I remember that. Because that's what I was going to say. The showcasing the CGI, like you said, Keith.
Yeah.
In that episode, I was like, this is just to show me how convincing breasts are in CGI. All the sex.
That was rather interesting, though.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's toned down, but it felt quite gratuitous at times.
So, during the first season, I used to watch a couple of them at work, and there's one or two where I've gone, no, I've got to turn that up. I can't watch that in this environment in case my boss peers over my shoulder. Some of them are not work safe.
Good grief, no. That was the thing about that particular episode. I mean, okay, the three themes are obviously love, death and robots.
Yes.
I mean, what particular theme did that one touch on? I mean, did it touch on death or did it touch on sort of love between...
I think it touched upon love because he was in love and it will eventually touch upon death because he's being sucked dry.
Mm-hmm. And his two colleagues were dead, weren't they?
By the look of him at the end, he was almost dead.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Right, what other ones? Oh, the Christmas episode. Where instead of these two kids go downstairs, because they think they can hear Santa Claus downstairs. Oh, but God. You see a tentacle grab hold of the carrot meant for Rudolph and the glass of milk for Father Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's actually this horrible sort of slimy creature who regurgitates Christmas presents.
It is Father Christmas, just not the Father Christmas she was expecting.
Well, the thing is, I mean, sort of, when the kids got their presents, you expect them to open the presents and something sort of very nasty and horrible to be inside them. But the little boy got a train set. And the little girl, she must have got a doll or something like that.
Well, yeah, it did show what she does.
But the thing was, what would have happened if they'd been naughty?
To cover every house in one night and consume that much milk and cookies and carrots and know everything, it's got to be some form of Cthulhu-esque monster.
Maybe multiple ones.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. One of the stranger ones I watched was The Drowned Giant.
Yes. There's
yes.
There's a couple of odd ones.
Washes up on the beach.
Yeah.
this town, was it a modern-day version of Lilliput, or...?
You don't know. That's it. Beyond the scope. It poses
more questions than it answers.
That is it. Some of them are just microcosmically small snapshots.
Yeah.
It's up to you, the viewer, to make up or form a narrative around it. It's just they've only got between 5 or 17 minutes to tell a story.
Well, was it a modern-day Lilliput, or was this person who was lying on the beach, was he from Robden Nag?
You don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah, it's beyond the realm of the story. That doesn't matter. It's just this little snapshot.
One snapshot was that, I think it was called, let me find the title, Fish Night, where two guys get stuck in the desert.
Yes.
And after mentioning, you know, if houses can contain the ghosts of humans, why can't a desert that used to be an ocean contain the souls of lost animals? And then all of a sudden there's an entire ocean, isn't there? Mm. Little trilobites.
Yeah. Colourful sea creatures.
Mm. Yeah. And you can jump up a swim, and it's not quite as safe, shall we say.
Yeah. I didn't get the impression that was ghosts. That was sort of more realities crossing or timelines crossing.
Was it him dying in real life and then becoming part of the environment with them?
Yeah. Yeah. But it again, that one showcased just the CGI for me, just all the colours.
Yeah.
Going back to the episode you mentioned, Ice Age. One scene that did make me laugh out loud was as viewed from inside the icebox.
You see
the city being built.
Yeah.
And you see those two construction workers sitting on an I-beam having their lunch. And so they're just staring at us.
That's very sort of those pictures of the Empire State Building that we recreated.
Yeah,
that we recreated.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was very good because you think it's ended, even though it's very short, you think it's ended after they have a big war, but then it resets, they start building again, then they get space technology, and all of a sudden they're gone. And it's quite a nice ending, but it's very quick, isn't it?
There certainly seem to be a few motifs that keep popping up in it again and again, specifically cats.
Yes.
Okay.
The vampire episode. Yes.
That's right.
The vampire episode, and I think there's a sequel to The Three Robots.
Oh, is there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I've not seen that one.
Where it ends up with them, obviously, there's been a colonization attempt where the humans tried to get off and live on Mars or somewhere like that. And then the camera cuts to Mars and you see this figure walking through the Martian landscape, sits down, operates its mask, which flits up, and it's a cat. What did you expect? Elon Musk?
Oh, brilliant.
Catastrophe.
Yes.
I did like the way once the yogurt had become sentient and finally ruled the world, it went to space and left everyone else behind.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice touch.
Maurice LaMarche, wasn't it? Doing his best Orson Welles impression.
Yeah.
Like Pinky in the Brain.
Yeah.
But why did the yogurt choose, was it Iowa or Idaho or something?
We had Lucky Hand, which was sort of almost Peter Davison with the cricket ball.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a cricket ball, so she breaks off her own hand
and
throws it and survives.
It's a very weird mixture of stuff.
It is very eclectic. But if you don't like one, there's going to be another one in a few minutes that's hilarious.
To me, it was very reminiscent of The Twilight Zone.
Yes!
It was sort of like a darker version, a more comedic, because there was comedy, but a bit like Out of the Unknown, that precursor to Doctor Who, because I've got that box set.
Yeah.
But I think the weirdest one I saw in season one was like where you can change history. And it was the death of Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
Six times over and getting a meteorite landing on him and jelly.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. And at the end of it, someone different got to the moon first.
Yeah.
And at one point it was a squid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Millions of years time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm impressed by some of the names they get in as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
A lot of them are adapted from short stories.
Yes.
A lot of it's John Scalzi, got Neil Asher, got Harlan Ellison's stuff, J.G. Ballard stuff in there, Peter F. Hamilton, a lot of very familiar sci-fi writers' names.
Yeah, it's also sci-fi writers with impressive credentials.
Yeah. Yeah. Who have written short stories that have been adapted or directly offered them, perhaps, in some cases. Perhaps not with Harlan Ellison, being he's been dead for a few years. But
I missed all that because Netflix kept skipping the credits.
Oh, yeah. Alistair Reynolds.
Yeah.
A lot of really quite big names behind some of these short stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the voice actors I seem to recognise as well. In fact, I think one or two of them popped up in more than one episode.
Okay, yeah. Well, we had Tarrant, didn't we, in the giant one?
Mm.
Stephen Pacey, is it?
Yeah.
So it's very much a multinational sort of...
It goes all over the place, all over the world. I find all the sort of America animal rustlers of some description, they're always the funny ones, and it works quite well. Because there's one called The Dump, where you've just got a monster that kills
absorbs
everything. And I couldn't help but be reminded of Scud the Disposable Assassin, made by the guys that made Rick and Morty. And the more it kills, the more it absorbs things. So you've got like plug sockets hanging off it, and weapons.
It's his puppy.
Yeah, his puppy's in there.
Yeah. Like I said, I thought they'd stop doing them, but they suddenly released, I think it was end of this year or...
Season 4 came out...
End of last year, beginning of this year.
May. Sure. Yeah. May's the most recent stuff, a couple months ago.
I do recommend it. It has the Dunn seal of approval. Mm,
yes. To me, it's very much the Twilight Zone. There's horror, science fiction, a touch of the macabre.
Yeah.
And also sort of some of those episodes where it has, the humour takes a very dark twist.
Oh, yes. You think you're in a comedy and then all of a sudden, they blindside you with something.
One story I'm surprised, they didn't adapt. Sort of speaking of the Twilight Zone, where this man's sitting in a Chinese restaurant, if he finishes his meal, when he goes to the fortune cookie, cracks it open, and the piece of paper says, "You are dead." So he cracks open another fortune cookie, same message, "You are dead." And so he's in this infinite restaurant, for the rest of eternity, opening Chinese fortune cookies and seeing the same message.
Wow.
If they had adapted that one...
That'd be good food, isn't it?
Yeah. They didn't have that, but they did have an episode where a woman spots a guy murdering another woman.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
They spend whole episode running chasing away from him, and then she kills him, and then she sees the bloke looking in the window at her standing over the bloke's body, and it just loops, and they keep changing places the whole time.
Yeah, very weird one. Yeah. Another one with the excessive boobies, which was
no
bad thing.
Everything in that one. But they like to break up all the horror and the boobies with a nice comedy episode, just to cleanse the palate, don't they? So we can safely say, yes, great CGI, tone it down now.
Oh, very much.
No.
Maybe not. No, thoroughly enjoyable. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely worth catching. Yes. You've got Netflix. It's an easy bit of time filler if you've got 20 minutes.
Mm, yeah.
You can get one, maybe even three episodes in.
Mm, yeah, depending on the length of the episode. Yeah. Yeah. I do recommend them. If you have seen Love, Death and Robots, tell us what you think at
show
at
staggeringstories.net. Oh, we almost made it all the way round twice.
Yeah. Almost. One too many of us, I'm afraid.
Oh, well.
There we go.
Hello again, boys and girls and adult listeners and everyone else. You never know. Open podcast, we'll broadcast to anyone.
Could be squids.
We have been listening to things.
Oh.
Yes. Mm. What have we been listening to over the past fortnight?
Had Jodie Whittaker in my ear.
Whittaker.
Yes, the first of the 13th Doctor audios, Vampire Weekend. Pause for music.
Oh, and who else was in it?
What's Mandy her name? Gill. Mandy
Jazz.
Yaz.
Jazz.
Jazz and Bumblebee, they're both in it. Just prime.
If only.
Doctor Who, roll out. K-9, transform.
So now you're on TARDIS Wicker, Keith. Why don't you give us the plot?
To be announced.
This is the first of... 12.
Yeah, I think it's 12. The 13th Doctor Adventures.
First season of that. Yes. Quick plot line. By the sounds of it, it is set somewhere between the second and the third.
Sounds like it's very soon after Graham and
Ryan has left. And Yaz and the Doctor are trying to negotiate the new relationship without other people.
That's
there.
Right. Doctor's not to interfere with her personal life when she returns to Earth.
Mm. Yeah,
because these are different friends.
They're back on Earth, and she has got an invitation to a hen party from one of her
Literal hen party.
That's right. Well, that does materialise. Mm.
It's Gina's hen do, and yes. No one's invited Gina.
No. Yeah. No, Gina's mum is there.
Yeah, Gina's mum is there.
We don't know what her name is. She's just called Gina's mum.
Yeah, even in the credits, it's Gina's mum.
It does indeed.
We never get a name. So initially, it's a whodunit, because we're trying to figure out who the vampire is.
Yeah, somebody in this group is a vampire.
Yes.
Is it Bobo the dog?
Well, the most likely candidate is Gina's mum, because nobody knows her real name.
That's it.
She doesn't offer it at any point.
No.
She's just known as Gina's mum.
Yeah. And if you, like, the doctor gets introduced to her as Gina's mum, and Gina's mum turns around and goes, "How do you know my Gina?"
Yeah. Throughout the whole rest of the adventure, it's just Gina's mum. Even Yaz cunningly got them to write down their name tags.
Yeah.
And it's written down, as far as I know, it's written down as Gina's mum.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget that Ian and Barbara are in this one.
Yes. Oh, yes. They're amazing.
Quite a shock.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor eventually turns up after the opening credits.
Well, just before.
Just before. Because they the do credits. It was quite a long teaser.
It was, wasn't it?
Because it's got them driving down. It's quite a long teaser. And then at the end of the teaser, the doors open and the Doctor's there with a couple of chickens because it is...
A hen do.
It says, let's get this party started.
Into
the Sagan Akinola
version
of the theme tune.
That's it. And she speaks... Hen.
Yeah. we have known that because what is it? An 11 spoke cat.
He did speak to a cat in the lodger, yes.
Yeah, and spoke baby.
And she casually says, "I'll just have a word with Ian, find out what's going on."
Yeah.
Says he hasn't seen Barbara.
They were very special hens. Alexander the Great lent them to her.
Yes, that's right. And they were vital to the plot for multiple reasons. Not only were they on reconnaissance, but their eggs provided protein for anyone who was bitten.
And also repulsed the vampire.
Yes.
Indeed. The truth vampire.
Yeah, it's not a blood sucking vampire.
Well, it sucks a bit of blood.
It sucks a bit of blood, but it's not. It's of a different strain.
Yeah.
Now, I have heard this before because we had this in one of the Hammer films, Kronos the Vampire Killer.
Right.
And that one, I think, was a youth vampire. It sucked youth.
Ah.
So there are precedent for different strains of vampire out there.
And it was nice that it linked it into the blood wars of Gallifrey, didn't it? And it's a big coming.
It's the first time I've heard that mentioned. Yes, we've had vampire wars or the eradication of the vampires.
Yeah, great vampires.
It's the first time I've heard them described as the Blood Lord and the Time Lord. I'm happy.
I'm loving that.
Yeah, I like that description.
Yeah.
As for the audio itself, I wasn't sure how well 13 would have come across on audio because she is very animated. But even though some of the lines, in my mind's eye, I could see her gurning.
Yeah. So
it comes across.
I think right at the beginning, I wasn't entirely convinced, but gradually she got into it.
Yeah.
And there was an interview I watched or listened to with her and Manic Gill saying that Manip had to remind her how to play certain scenes.
Yeah.
So she did warm into it, and I was convinced by the end. It was nice to have the 13th Doctor back.
Yeah, it's really good to hear again. Mm. Yeah. Because she's been on TV fairly recently.
Yes. Her second comeback.
Yeah, indeed. But yeah, it's good to have her back, even though it's not been that long since she left.
She still has and is playing it with the complete manic energy.
Oh, good grief.
It's the sudden snap ideas as the thought jumps tracks.
Yeah, I like it when she called herself a silly Billy.
Yeah.
Parking the Dodge in the middle of a maze.
Keeps offering people eggs, doesn't she? Any problem, here, have an egg. Do you want an egg?
Hold this for me. It's an egg. Yeah. I don't want to break it when I bend over.
Talking of the theme tune composer, the only bit that was a bit jarring was perhaps the incidental music. It was noticeable.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite fit the 13th Doctor's era.
No, in the extras he said he tried to make it start off as if it's Akinola's work and then merge to his own, but I didn't get that impression.
I didn't get that myself. If anything, I thought it was the other way round.
Yeah, maybe.
It's to my mind, it started off as his own work and then later it sort of had Akinola-esque.
Mm. It just seemed to link things to the next scene, didn't it? It wasn't so much in the background. It just all of a sudden it came in and they went to the next room to check on people. And so it was quite present.
Yeah, it was a linking the themes.
Yeah.
If I had a problem with it, it is that I couldn't always tell the characters apart.
Definitely.
Particularly,
yes.
Particularly on even that very first scene with them in the car.
To begin with.
100% sure, is that Yaz or
yeah.
not? Mm,
yeah. You're dealing with people with similar accents, aren't you, yeah. as well?
Poor Yaz didn't get the most dialogue ever in that era.
Yeah.
She's not the most distinctive of voices.
For me, certainly to begin with, the voices were too similar.
Yes.
It wasn't until I was about halfway through. It could be the fact that you're just listening to the audio. It's not the audio and the visual, so you can easily identify who is who.
Exactly.
But it took me until the end part, or towards the end, before I began to go, right, that's Yaz, that's the doctor, that's Gina's mum, that's...
Yeah, I found Gina's mum always very obvious.
Yeah.
She's got a very distinct voice in that group.
I got to admit, when I first heard it, I thought it was Kate. I thought she was Katie Manning. I mean, you know.
See, I've only recently re-listened to the Philip Hinchcliffe, Tom Baker, Leela story box set.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Mandy Simmons is in that as, I've known anything like it in all my puff. Sort of, you know, she's dealing with cadavers and things like that. So I couldn't get that out of my head. But yeah, she definitely stuck out for the right reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mind you, one thing I did find unintentionally amusing, sort of, who on earth has a name like Zoya?
Yeah, not one I've ever heard of before.
It was very of the modern era. Mm, it fitted with certain things. I know one of the guys came out and he was discussing the issue with pronouns for him and things like that. Yeah. So it definitely fits in that sort of modern era in the last sort of 5 to 10 years.
Yes.
It would be a bit jarring if it was a Tom Baker story, I think.
Yeah,
that
no, they pitched it at the right tone for what they were trying to copy.
Yeah, exactly. Because the character was actually going through something.
Yeah.
And it was the vampires that had made him be quite truthful about himself and his doubts.
So once you get bitten, you have about 5-10 minutes of nothing but truth before you collapse.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, one thing I noticed about this episode was they made the vampire quite feral. Almost, almost beast-like.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I think that may have been based on who he was copying. Mm-hmm. But because if I remember rightly, he was an interrogation device initially.
Oh, I recall that now. Yeah.
That's right, because the 13th Doctor's been all over the place, isn't she, before going there?
Macedonia,
that's Pluto.
Yeah.
And they're trapped behind a force barrier, that is an automatic defence of the TARDIS, which is quite interesting.
Which
puts the defence up and locks you all in with it.
Yeah.
You've got to deal with it.
Which I thought was interesting, keeping in line with the Type 40, the record of Rassilon
from the State of Decay.
One thing that struck me about the vampire was, yes, it was Bobo all along.
Dun, dun, dun!
Don't know where the mask comes from, but
the thing was, I mean, to me, the vampire reminded me of H.R. Giger, Alien.
Yeah.
The creature takes on some of the physical traits of its host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was meant to be an interrogation device initially. So you get the impression that its DNA was tinkered with.
Mm.
And it doesn't necessarily need to hide in plain sight as a normal vampire would do to hunt.
Mm. I see. It hasn't got the slick back hair or the...
The cape.
The cape, that's it.
Yeah. I think once a TARDIS has locked you in with it, though, that goes out the window too, doesn't it? You just reveal yourself and...
When I saw the front cover, I thought that was meant to be a weevil.
It did look pretty weevil-like. But it still bites you on the neck, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is that an implication that weevils are actually vampire-related? I don't know.
Don't know. Perhaps it was something they need to
pull. From the first episode of Torchwood, I mean, sort of weevils live in the sewers, so they eat all manner of interesting things.
Mm. Yes.
There was meant to be some building up of a season arc going on, although, must admit, I didn't really pick up on it very well.
Well, it might be too early. I mean, it's only the first episode, so things might develop later, or might call back to this
later.
Yeah,
when we re-listen to this after having heard all 12 or however many there are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be just a one-liner that we didn't pick up on.
Yeah, probably.
It's nice that we've got 12 episodes in the season, though, isn't it? It's nice to be able to look forward to that and go through an arc after the last seasons of Shooty being so short.
Yeah.
So we've got Jodie and we've got Jo Martin doing Fugitive Doctor box sets as well.
Yeah, indeed. And we've got Sacha Dhawan.
We have.
Master box sets are out as well. well. So we've got a lot of this era happening at Big Finish at the moment.
Knocking around.
So yeah, it'd be easy to get them together and carry on from the TV series.
Well, you never know. So they might be popping up in later box sets, you know, cross-pollinating.
That's it. Maybe they can fill in the blanks with the Flux. What the Flux? Yeah. Maybe they could, how the universe healed itself or something.
Yeah, that was always left open, wasn't it?
Flux 2.
But just basing off this one episode, this one story, I have the feeling that they've got more of a handle on the 13th Doctor than Chibnall did.
Oh, really? Okay.
It could change in the future, but just taking this as an example.
I always felt that the whole writer's room was actually a weakness because they promoted it in that you'd have stronger writing, better stories, more coherent characters. But it never translated like that for me. It just felt very slow, and they often wouldn't fill in certain information. It was almost like they weren't quite concentrating on each other's writing.
Yeah, I do remember reading where Chibnall says, he's got no idea where the story's going. This is just it as it is now. I don't want to make it sound derogatory, but they were making up as they went along.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I always thought that her Doctor was quite well drawn in the Chibnall era. It's all the other characters, like Graham, Ryan, particularly Yaz. Couple of seasons there who weren't quite so well drawn.
And Yaz came too.
Yeah. It's all in the can, of course, this stuff. This is recorded back in this one in June last year. Mm. But hopefully, as the run goes on, we might get a guest appearance by Bradley Walsh or Tosin Cole.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Maybe Evil Dan.
Yeah, or maybe some classic monsters will come in. You never know.
Yeah, she didn't get a great deal of that, did she?
No.
She got Sartarans, she did get Daleks a few times. She got Sidemen a lot.
Yes.
Sea Devils, probably best not mention that.
They looked good, but...
Well, based off of this one, I am hopeful.
Yeah, I think it's a good start.
Yeah.
It's not the usual overly complex Big Finish story.
Not to begin with,
which is mind-bending. You have to listen to it five times to understand what's going on. it's a good start, definitely.
If you have heard this one, tell us what you think. Write to us at...
At...
Stargaring...
Stories...
Grotch... We're being glared at.
Talking of doctors...
Well, you have to, it's an inky that squirts a lot. He's very small, and there's a lot of hair there that he has to look through.
He's foraging in the undergrowth.
It's like, it always reminds me of David Bellamy sort of pulling apart the foliage.
That's it. The Buffon.
It should be that Lenny Henry pulling apart the foliage.
Good evening.
John Pertwee's thick thatch.
Yes, he's smiling benevolently down at us.
Shall we?
Yes.
Hello, Head of Pertwee!
Hello, Handles.
Inkimit squirts a lot.
Dinkimit squirts a lot.
Terence.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Graham.
Various Nebulas.
Dangerous Churchill. Nazi Spock.
The Ashes of Grunhilde Knobnacker.
And, of course, that gentle orange glow.
Oh, yes, of Clara. Do we have feedback?
We have one bit of written feedback.
Ooh. Yes. It is from Catherine!
The Dragon Maker! How are you?
Hello, Staggers!
Hello, Catherine!
Hello, Catherine. Hello, Terence! Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty! Yes. And hello, Head of Pertwee! Apologies for the near radio silence for the last few episodes. The spring and summer to this point have been pretty much sucked rocks.
Oh dear, I'm
so sorry.
We stole the sun.
Here's hoping for no more losses and better sales from this point forward. And the less said about the reality, the better.
I agree.
I think you'll find reality is overrated.
Yes.
Let's talk about fictional dystopia instead.
Oh, yes.
Andor, both seasons, is simply the best television I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Well, that sums it up nicely.
Yeah.
Be well, my friends, and on.
Oh, goodbye.
Catherine Dragonmaker.
Thank you.
What? You wanted more?
Yes, please.
Since it's you guys, okay.
Okay.
Something that stands out in Andor are the speeches and the performances.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's Lutheran sacrifices speech in the first season that really should have ended with Lonnie, the guy who was speaking to, wetting himself. Merva's holographic speech at her funeral.
Yes.
Then there's Val's "This is on you now," like skin speech in season two, which gives me goosebumps, the way she delivers it to the insurrectionist who shot Cinta.
Yeah.
And Nimick's manifesto thread through both seasons.
Yes.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
As a Rebels fan, I often think about where the Ghost crew might have been and what they were up to during various points of Andor. I was a little disappointed that there was no shout-outs at all, even though there was a couple in Rogue One.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of Rebels, the first mention of Gorman was in the episode that showed when our heroes meet Mon Mothma and transport her part of the way to Dantooine.
Yep.
The timeline and events didn't quite match up with what we see in Andor, but I'm sure we can all hand-wave that away.
Yeah, it's basically... They then drop them off to the Gold Squadron, don't they? Andor does. I think it kind of works.
I think I read somewhere that there were probably multiple speeches.
There's talk of there maybe having been two,
Like the prison setting in season one, the Gorman story in season two was standout. A fascinating look at fascism, sorry, I'm mangling my words there, and media manipulation, absolutely prescient for what we are seeing in the world today and my country today. And on that note, I must really wrap up. No time to record, and there's lawn guys making a lot of noise across the street. So thank you to whoever is reading this one out. That's no problem. Always a service. Be well, my friends. Anon. And you, Catherine.
Yes, thank you, Gavin.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Improve, yes.
Anon. Catherine Dragonmaker, P.S., really signing off this time.
I hope things get better, yes.
Yeah, as I was mentioning to you, the Death Star plans, and you told me that that was written about a year and a half before certain journalists were invited into war reports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that stuff about the accidental leaking of vital information. And you think it's talking about current affairs, but actually...
No, it was, done beforehand. It was
written and probably shot before all that happened.
Yeah.
Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
Mm, oh, good grief.
Yeah. I don't mind it being stranger than fiction. I object to it copying fiction.
Particularly the dystopian
bits of fiction. Yes. Where is it? 1984 and something else. I can't remember that. It was a list of books and say, this is fiction, not a blueprint.
Yes. Sad but true.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough politicking.
Yes.
I'm glad you read that one. It was about a show I hadn't watched.
Not seen Andor.
You have to watch Andor.
I've still not seen it.
We'll hold a cheese party. Come round, watch a couple of episodes.
That sounds
good. I've started watching the second season, but my feelings about it are mixed.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm, yeah.
It's a slower burn than your standard Star Wars.
Well, that's
quite deliberately.
As I said, season one took about four episodes to... It didn't really get into it until the fourth episode.
Yeah, they were quite wise in dropping those first three together.
Yeah.
I think they would have lost even more audience. The ratings were pretty bad for that first season. Hmm? But word of mouth, I think, really turned it around for that second season.
I just loved Rogue One, so anything that links in or leads up to that...
Yeah,
it's the further you get into season two, the more you can see the jigsaw bits slotting into place for Rogue One.
I love that stuff with the Force-sensitive woman.
Yes.
Can sense his importance. Yeah,
he's not sensitive in the Force, but the Force is moving around him.
Yeah, so great stuff. Hmm. But anyway.
Hmm. I'll go back to it sometime or other.
Yeah.
I mean, I got about halfway in, nothing's really happening as such.
Yeah.
All right, they got all that hoo-ha happening on Gorman, but that's it.
All that hoo-ha. You just eat some cheese and crackers.
I didn't have to ask whether we were watching the same show. Sorry.
Vitally important stuff, which it's interesting. Both sides needed the Gorman massacre to happen.
Yeah, for different reasons.
Yeah, the Imperials needed it so they could get the resources they needed, and the Rebels needed it to get show their cause really going.
Show how bad they are.
Yeah, but it's more about spiders than anything else. And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww. Thank God.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
Is it V?
We need V for Vendetta, that guy, don't we?
Yeah.
That verisimilitude.
Vaguely.
Venomous.
vexes.
Voluptuous.
Voluptuous. Vying.
Vixen.
Vacuous.
For our verification comes veering towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Go on, prove me wrong. Destroy this fabric of the universe. See if I care.
You've been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 476, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Keith Dunn, and Scott Fuller. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Testing 321, 321, 123, 7.
Testing ABC, ABC, CBA.
Testing, testing CBBs. CBBs.
What I love about these 1 minute silences is beforehand everyone taking deep breaths when all you need to do is breathe shallowly and point your nose and face away from the microphone.
There's a fun in that.
I like to gurgle.
Or just waiting for someone to go.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the traffic to go.
Noisy, isn't it?
Okay. Are we recording?
So, one, we're recording. Two, we've done our sound checks. Three, we've done our silence. Four, we are recording.
Well, was there a technical error?
We forgot to record.
Oh, no.
Fortunately, we only got sort of past
the
news.
Just got to end of the news, so I just had to reread all the news.
Yeah.
I read it worse the second time.
Transformer.
Mostly concerning Mr. Gatwa. Sorry, just really whacked the microphone there. I do apologise. I will say again.
Got that excited about him.
I got that excited, yeah. Trixie has no teeth.
Oh.
And does she smell?
I'm terrible.
So we have problems with our tongue. When she barks, the tongue sort of lolls out. Oh. And every now and again, she doesn't bark. She just goes... She can give you a damn good gumming. Which actually she did the other day. We were cooking a chapatas with sausages. So I put the sausages in the air fryer, turned the air fryer and sat back down. And she's there sniffing my fingers because I've picked up the sausages to put them in. And it's a case of on the end of my finger.
Yeah, but there again, two of our cat setters have all their teeth taken out. But the thing is, their gums harden, so they can still give you a nasty nip.
Well, with her, it's sort of like being bitten by a soft bulldog clip. Or a bulldog clip wrapped in sponge. You can tell there's hardness.
It's not going to let it go, but doesn't quite hurt.
Yeah, you can tell there's hardness in there, and it could give you quite a nasty nip, but there's all this sponge
there's
around
something
it.
Beyond the sponge.
Yeah, yeah.
How long is it?
Quite long.
Okay, I won't do that one.
I've lost my breech.
Then step into it.
I've navigated away from my breech.